Hello and welcome to another episode of the Total Football Analysis Bundesliga podcast. With me as always is Cam Meegan. Hello, Cam.
Hello.
Hello. And this week our guest is Abel Mecharos. Hello, Abel.
Hey, hey. Hey, thanks for having me on.
No problem. Abel, for those of you who don't know, Abel works for Sport TV. It's part of the AMC network as a pundit. And he told us that he often is on the Europa League shows, but tonight he isn't. And their loss is our gain. So welcome, Abel. Abel, I wanted to ask you as well, one of the reasons we brought Abel on is his knowledge of the Bundesliga. And something that he does is the Bundesliga Bulletin. I don't know if you wanted to give that a little plug as well, Abel.
Yeah, sure. It's a newsletter that I think I started, it's just about a year ago right now. And basically, there's a free version and there's a paid subscription version. And I try to just do analysis of games. We'll try to do some interviews, podcasts as well. So it's basically because I thought there was like nobody doing newsletters for, I mean, there's all a couple of newsletters before for general sort of soccer, football stuff, but nothing on the Bundesliga. And so it's been a lot of fun. There's, I've got 600-700 people that are subscribed and, you know, some very good supporters as well. So hopefully, you know, it will just give you more of a like an overview and breakdown of things, and mostly just because I watch too much Bundesliga, and obviously I don't have enough outlets on Twitter and TV and everywhere else where I'm doing that. I need another thing. Actually, it's good because I get to write more in English, which I don't do as much anymore.
Yeah, and it really is a fantastic resource, and I really recommend people download it. It's always a good read. Cam, what's been new with you this week? Anything in particular? Any analyses?
Same old stuff, really. Chelsea against Bayern Munich, I covered for the site. That's the only piece I've had this week, really.
Oh, yeah, I did read that this morning as well. There's another good piece, as always, Cam.
Thank you.
Yeah, Abel, did you watch the Bayern game?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I actually, like, the one thing that I did spend my day on today is doing a podcast on all of the Champions League matches, and that required me to go back and watch all four of them. And I watched the one thing I didn't watch back is the Chelsea Bayern one, but I did write like a pretty long preview for it. And some of the discussion and some of the total football analysis stuff that Cam wrote before, and then like the site helps me a lot in preparing. So, but yeah, the match itself was a little bit like a surprise for me, just in the sense of Chelsea pressing was a little bit more intense early on than I thought, and then, like, you know, second half obviously just things falling apart, and overall the Bayern win was pretty much what you thought would happen, just maybe not in that way, in that extreme way.
And what podcast is that, Abel? Just so we can check that out.
It's a Patreon one, but it's in Hungarian, so it's not nothing that, like, well, I could appeal to people who speak Hungarian, but but yeah, we spent some time on that, and it was a fun part because I actually watched the game in a bar that opened in Budapest, which is the opening ceremony of the first Bayern Munich fan club. And I'm actually, the spoiler alert is I'm actually not a Bayern Munich fan, so but it was a good time because I, you know, this sort of community events is not something that I often attend, but it was nice to kind of connect with fans and viewers and people who just you know, watch the games, and just kind of was a different atmosphere than, you know, sitting in front of your laptop or at home and watching the game that way.
Yeah, it's a totally different way to take in a game, and I think sometimes as well you come away from such experiences seeing a game totally different to how someone might watching it on a laptop or watching it by themselves. All right, so Cam, you wrote an article about the game, so tell us something about it. Nice and blunt question.
Abel's just mentioned about Chelsea's press being a bit of a surprise, and I agree with him, really. They particularly looked to press aggressively when Bayern were more or less facing their own goal, and when they couldn't get into that back three formation that they like to get into. So when either Thiago or Kimmich stayed in that double pivot, Chelsea would then, usually Mason Mount would go and aggressively press Jerome Boateng. And that did cause Bayern some problems in the first half. I mean, it stopped some of the build-up, but it more or less just kind of delayed them a little bit until they then retreated into the back three, and then Chelsea had to kind of sit back into a mid-block a little bit more. And that mid-block wasn't particularly horizontally compact, I wouldn't say. I mean, Bayern looked to access that third line, so the defensive line of Chelsea, and it was usually Lewandowski against Azpilicueta. And when Bayern did it in defeat, Azpilicueta could deal with it. But then, as we saw for the second goal, when they started to go a bit more direct after they lured that press from Chelsea, then Lewandowski could get the better of Azpilicueta.
The question I want to ask you, Cam, is just something that I've been kind of struggling to figure out, is what do you think, like, was it the difference for the second half? Was it like Chelsea press kind of dying or dropping off, or just couldn't keep up the energy, or Bayern adjusting? Because the only thing that I really started seeing more towards like the end of the first half is they were using more of a connected progression, where they would bring back Thomas Müller into like a number eight role. Like, so he started as a 10, but just kind of pick up and receive the balls. And that's not something that I saw so much early on. So like, did you see anything else, or like, maybe I have that wrong?
Yeah. Usually they were creating pretty much a 4v2 overload on the two mm-hmm. Chelsea midfielders. It was, and pretty much they were just able to manipulate that and access that third line, like I've talked about. But I think they went a bit more direct in the second half, Bayern. So, like I mentioned, if one player then went and dropped back, so say Thiago goes and drops back, he was followed by Jorginho every time. And so they'd kind of just play that pass, play it back into the centre-backs. That press is then lured, and then Chelsea are in a 5-1-4 formation, basically. So they could pretty quite easily overload, and then Lewandowski was almost a target man at times, and then they could just play off him from there.
Yeah, I didn't really enjoy like Jorginho pressing high that much. I thought that, because that was my thing when I thought about the way this game was going to go, is like it's not a great look for Chelsea if they want to press high all that much, because they're not bad at it. I think they're fairly decent at it, and some guys like Mount is good at it, but I don't think like Jorginho is particularly, that's what you want out of him. And then out wide, it's like tougher for them with Marcos Alonso, I think, as well, and no chance to deal with Davis, I think, even with Reece James, who's, you know, like athletically there, but like, you know, nobody's really there with Davis when he, like, did you like the plays where like Mount just has like 5 yards on him, and even when he gets the positioning wrong and he just catches up, like it's insane.
Yeah, I thought that was as the game progressed, I thought that looked like a pretty bad matchup. But maybe that would be the case for any player playing against Davies.
I was going to say, Chelsea didn't look to have any kind of tactical plan to deal with Davies.
Yeah.
I think with Bayern, they've got Pavard on at right wing back usually, don't they? And I think if you can kind of push them onto that side a little bit more.
Yeah, he's very pressable, yeah.
He's not going to go on a 50-yard sprint up the pitch and cause damage, is he?
Well, one thing I was impressed with was Bayern's plan to deal with Chelsea's counter-attack. And I don't know if you wanted to highlight that, Cam.
Yeah, just in terms of the general offensive structure, the two central midfielders, so Kimmich and Thiago, don't push forward really and don't look to get ahead of the ball and progress play that way. They tend to just stay behind it, similar to how Liverpool structure their attacks. So in that regard, if they then lose the ball, they've just got immediate pressure from in front of the opposition, so it's easier for them to counter press pretty much.
I just feel like they don't need to, like, because of their, like, one thing that has really improved under Hansi Flick is the pressing, counter pressing stuff, and like they can just generate so much pressure with the front four, you know, that like very very rarely, like I think Kimmich I've never even seen like near the 18-yard box pretty much, and Thiago rarely has to go up there, and both of them have, like, Thiago had so many interceptions, I think like 5 tackles, 5 interceptions, and so many of these like just cleaning up stuff. And Kimmich is superb when it comes to like the spatial awareness, when it comes to like, because one of the things he does a lot of times when they do sag off is he drops back as like a third center back, and he's really good at sort of the man marking aspects and positioning stuff. Thiago as well, but like I agree with you, and I think also some aspect of it is that Chelsea to me are not like a super great like counter attacking team. Certainly with, like, you know, this iteration of Chelsea, which doesn't have Pulisic or doesn't have Kante or doesn't have Hudson-Odoi, like, it's much harder to do the good counterattacks with, I think Mount is decent at it, but, you know, he lacks sort of the top-end speed and you know, Ross Barkley, I just, you know, lacks a lot of things, and Giroud, obviously. I know you wrote in your article at the end that you would have loved to have seen somebody, you know, faster and trickier against Boateng. And I thought, like, in my preview, I thought it was going to be Tammy Abraham, who I guess wasn't 100% fit and, you know, not been in great form. But I agree with the same way, because that's what I thought. Like my basic thought on this game and what ended up happening is that there just wasn't really, like, a path to victory for Chelsea, because, like, they're not a great counter-attacking team. They're, like, a possession team, which you're not going to have possession against the Bayern team that presses the hell out of everybody with Hansi Flick now. So with Jorginho and Kovacic, you really, you know, really don't. I guess Kovacic had a lot of really nice dribbles to get out of pressure and whatnot. But how are you going to counter-attack with no wingers? You know, how, you know, so I just didn't see it. And I guess the second half just really, really showed it. And then, of course, you saw, like, sort of the very sort of basic defensive mistakes, how, you know, Rudiger was pulled out of position so often by the movement of Gnabry and Lewandowski. And, yeah, it just seemed like a different class.
Just on that thing about dealing with Alphonso Davies, Liverpool, when they played against Wolves, pressed in a particular way to limit Adama Traore's ability to just dribble through people, basically, from a wing-back area. And no teams really look to play this against Bayern yet, and people seem to just kind of hope that Davies isn't going to do much. And then when Bayern drop into that back three and it opens up space for the wing-backs, which we've talked about on, I think, every podcast now, that just, they don't seem to have any kind of plan for it. And for just with that Liverpool structure, it was pretty much the usual 4-3-3, but then it would drop into a basically an asymmetrical 4-3-3, so 4-4-2 basically, and it was just pressing aggressively whenever they looked to get it to Traore, so they went across to the other side. And I think if you do that with Pavard, then you can limit the build-up pretty much.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to move on to looking at something else now, and Cam and I have been a bit conscious of just focusing on the title chase and the relegation battle, so we wanted to give a bit of attention to some of the teams that really aren't involved in either of those. And we decided to look at 6th, 7th and 8th place this evening, maybe 9th as well, we have enough time. And so we're going to look at Schalke, Hoffenheim and Wolfsburg. So I guess it would make sense for us to start with 6th place and we'll work our way down. And who wants to discuss Schalke?
Me again, isn't it?
Cam?
Yep.
Is it you? Okay, Cam, tell us a little bit about Schalke.
Right, well, Schalke are a bit of a weird team, really, in terms of the position in the table. So, but yeah, in terms of, if you look at just the basic stats, you don't see anything impressive with them, really. So 37 expected goals against, and they've conceded 32. And they've only generated 29 expected goals, which is the same as Mainz. Just on the surface of it, it looks like they are going to start to decline a little bit. But in terms of just the style of play and how this leads into the stats, they're a team that mostly rely on transitions and winning the ball back to create the chances. So if you look at the personnel in that midfield diamond, you're looking at, so against Mainz, they started Alessandro Schöpf, Omar Masgrill, Weston McKennie and Amin Harit. And you're obviously not seeing much offensive creativity in that. And I'm not sure David Wagner really wants that. The main strength in the whole team is the pressing, really. Every time I'm writing analysis of them, there's usually a heading with Schalke's pressing and how they've done it. The average 9.85 PPDA and a third in the Bundesliga for challenge intensity on Y Scout, which I didn't really know what that was, but it combines duels, tackles and interceptions per minute of opponent possession. So it does what it says in the tin, really. Within that 4-4-2 pressing structure in the diamond, it pretty much forces the opponent to go into the wide areas because you've got two strikes on the centre-backs and then you have the two eights, so the right centre-mid and the left centre-mid pressing the full-backs. So the pressing distance between the two centre mids and the fullbacks is obviously a little bit larger. So you're pretty much just guiding them out there. And then once you go there, you can go and press. But Schalke have got a really good habit of using pressing traps and just looking to lock teams in those wide areas and then just use a touchline as another pressing player. So they've done it against the games that stood out for me were Leipzig and Dortmund earlier in the season, where they just got stuck trying to break them down,
yeah,
basically just getting trapped in the wide areas and didn't really know how to progress it into the middle. The press is also helped by the fact they're pretty decent in the air, despite some injuries to key players. So second best aerial dual percentage in the league, which obviously means if teams want to just boot it long to avoid that press, then they can deal with that as well. But in terms of just sustained possession, they're not that great. We've seen them struggle to break teams down. Not much creativity or impressive offensive structure, really. They tend to just rely on the diamond to create an overload in the centre. And then the opponent obviously looks at them, protect the centre, and then you just create space out wide for players. But they don't really occupy the half spaces particularly well. They're okay at it, but most of the goals come from winning it high and then transitioning from there, or counter-attacks, really.
So, I mean, I'd just like to discuss really their recent form, Cam, and ask you if they're doing anything different, because last five league games, they've got 3 points, and those three are from draws against Mainz, Paderborn, and Hertha. And all three of those are bookended by 5-0 losses from Leipzig and Bayern. So I was just wondering what are they doing differently right now? Is there anything that in particular that you've noticed?
Not a great deal. So them two heavy losses were pretty much showed Schalke's main problem in terms of they're so reliant on that press, yeah, and usually pretty excellent at it. So when it's broken, they're in serious trouble. So Bayern are one of the best teams in Europe in terms of breaking presses, like we've discussed already. And they just broke it and terrorised them. I can't remember the expected goals on that game, but it was something ridiculous.
It's like 3.3 to like 0.5. in front of me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But like my thing with, to give a little context to Schalke, like I watched them pretty much every week, and lately interesting because of like what Cam was saying, is that like to me they're a team that essentially when their press isn't able to dominate, like against Gladbach in the first game of the spring season, the Rückrunde, that they were able to just stifle Gladbach's build up and they can win the balls there and launch these quick counter attacks and sometimes just score directly in front of goal. But when their press doesn't work as well, or they face a team like Leipzig or Bayern that just has a little too much quality, and then they go behind, they just have no way of coming back, because in possession, even against a bad or weaker team, like this is a reason or explanation for those draws against Hertha, Paderborn, and Mainz, are like the teams that just give them possession. They're really like their only offensive structure is they drop Mascare back as the sort of third center back, and they try to progress there, but like none of their center backs, and now they have Kabak, who is more of a like slow decision maker. He's very athletic, but not with the ball necessarily. He doesn't really join the attack. And Nastasic, who was at Man City for a little bit, can't really advance the ball that much. And the one guy that they could have to progress was Stambouli, who's been hurt since like November. So basically, it's just a lot of long balls. They try to go out wide to Jonjo Kenny, who you guys probably will know from Everton. Mm-hmm. It's like the only thing that I see from them is like left-sided triangles with Serdar, who's really been their best player, so left-sided number 8 of the diamond, and Očipka, who's kind of a decent dribbler at the fullback. So that's how I see them sort of progressing. But I was doing studio for Hertha. It was one of the worst 0-0s I've ever seen. Like it's like one of those games where like the total XG of the match was I think under 1 or barely got to 1, and like they needed they needed some horrendous goalkeeper mistake to actually have like a one decent chance. Like it's just
Yeah, so you mentioned those games about Hertha, Mainz, and Paderborn. Again, it's if you don't allow them opportunities to press and then win the ball back, then they basically just kind of struggle with it. And like Abel's already mentioned with the build-up play, they don't have many creative players. They've got Amin Harit, but he doesn't occupy the greatest space in the world. And I think his season's probably tailed off a little bit now. He started really impressively, and it started to slowly go downhill and meet Schalke's form. So just, I'm not sure Schalke will finish sixth. It almost depends on what fixtures they've got left. Because if you stick them against teams that give them possession and say, come on and break us down, then they will struggle. And just as well on set pieces as well, they can be prone to. So they use almost, it's pretty much a man-marking approach. I mean, they've got two players who's only marked the six-yard box, but it's pretty much man-marking, which is never good in my book. So they've conceded goals from set pieces against Paderborn, Leipzig, Bayern, Wolfsburg, and Leverkusen. So
yeah, they're hard to watch now. Like this is like, yeah, I guess they're gonna play Köln, so they can press the hell out of each other. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think something that I've noticed in the last couple of games, and I haven't, if I'm honest with you, I haven't looked at the pass map, so this could just be me talking rubbish and making an assumption. But I've just seen, we're talking about Harit, and I've just seen him getting on the ball less and less. And I wonder if that's perhaps why they haven't looked as good. I think his body language even doesn't look great. And
I mean, I feel like the way he gets on the ball is you're right that he probably gets on less, but I think like it's just where he gets on the ball, I think is worse, because like typically what they do is once they go behind or like game phase is bad for them or game state, like he will try to come back deeper and deeper. And I think like the one goal they gave up against Leipzig, like I know it was against Bayern, like we analyzed this on the show, and it was like they're pressing their back three at this point. They're pressing with one forward, and like Kabak could just like dribble forward, could just take the space. And then he ends up like playing it into, it was against Bayern. He plays it to Harit, and there's like three guys setting a pressing trap on him. It's like that's like a typical Schalke thing when they go behind. And like there's just so many different options, but probably Harit just gets frustrated and he's like, give me the ball, and you know, and that doesn't work. Like
we'll go from sixth to seventh, and we'll look at Hoffenheim. And Abel, I believe we asked you to have a look at Hoffenheim for us. So be really interested to hear what you have to say on them.
Yeah. It's like, this is like the fun part about talking about Hoffenheim is that this is probably the weirdest team in the Bundesliga. I guess technically they're in eighth because of goal difference, but still, like this is Hoffenheim. So obviously the context is that, you know, they lost Nagelsmann, they lost a bunch of important players. You know, Joel Linton is at Newcastle, and then they brought in Alfred Schroeder, who's a Dutch coach who was previously at Ajax as assistant coach, and then before he was at Twente, and then before he was at Nagelsmann as an assistant. But he doesn't play like Nagelsmann at all. Like his like they play one of two styles. Either they play like a sort of very typical counter-attacking style. This is usually against teams that they think like they're inferior against, typically like the Bayerns and the Leipzigs and Dortmunds. And that actually tends to turn out well for them. And they usually get like good results against those teams. Like you probably remember that they're the ones who beat Bayern, of course. Schalke, they beat. It was another one of those games where they didn't do anything for 70 minutes and then just hit counters on Schalke. Dortmund, they ended up beating in the last game of the Hinrunde. So they did that pretty well. I think even Leverkusen, they snatched these wins. But then like they also play this slow possession game when they play teams that are inferior, like against like a Freiburg or, you know, like even Augsburg, like and Mainz, like those can look horrible. Like the game they played against Augsburg was they lost 4-2, and Mainz they lost 5-1. A team Mainz had 10 men on the field for 45 minutes. So like it's just, and you just shake your head, you know. And it's also like a very much like a transitioning team in terms of personnel, because they for a long time, you know, Kevin Vogt was their big center back when they played three in the back. And so he didn't get along with Schroeder, and he was sent out to Bremen. And he was a big part of their, they had like basically like a lot of their, like they just pretty much alternate wins and losses. And then they had that 5-game win streak, which has pretty much made their season between match day 7 and 12. And, you know, the possession game is basically a lot of kind of, I don't want to say pointless, but like not particularly progressive passes by Hübner, who's the center back, but he's not like a great ball progressor. Nordveit, who you guys probably will remember from West Ham.
unfortunately.
Unfortunately. And I mean, the fact that he's playing is also a lot, says a lot, but Grilic is the one guy who's really good. And he's been in a lot of, again, Premier League rumors. And, you know, last year he was supposed to be going to Spurs. This year it might be like Arsenal or somebody, or Newcastle, I guess. But so he's a guy who's really the strategic thinker. So can play as a number six most of the time. He will play in a double pivot. He will play as a third center back. And the reason why I'm giving you like all these formations is because the one constant for Schroeder is playing not necessarily different formations, because he does play different formations pretty much every game, but because it's more about like principles for him, which is just having, you know, ball progression, just kind of trying to get out of your own third. Occupying certain spaces, like, you know, the number six, or just having good wide players. But the biggest thing for him is that like he's played every single player in a out of position, or in a like a different position than you normally are accustomed to. So Grilic has played center back, which is okay. Sebastian Rudy, who is basically known as like a number six most of the time, he now plays right back in the four system, he's played center back at right back. He's played Robert Schko, who's like a inverted right winger. He plays him at left back. He played Dennis Geiger, who's like an attacking mid. He played him at a false nine. He played the center back at left winger. Like, I don't know. There's a joke on Twitter that we make with some of the people who follow Hoffenheim, is that like the only thing he needs to do now is play like a goalkeeper at DM or something, because they're just so weird. So, and he's been kind of complaining that they don't have enough players, and they brought in Brun Larsen from Dortmund, who plays now up front with like as a sort of wide forward with Schko, and they have Kramaric, who sometimes is hurt. Dabur, who they just paid like 10 million or 12 million, he got hurt. Adamian, who scored the goals against Bayern, he's now for the season. So it's not been easy for him. That's the other thing, is like part of it is he's had to adjust and chop and change. But it's like one of those teams where, you know, like none of their numbers look super great. Like I think they're sort of, you know, like negative goal difference, expected goals, -3.5 or from what numbers I have. But they turn a lot of these draws into wins. And then, you know, that 5-game winning streak has basically been the key to their season. I mean,
One thing I've noticed is that, I mean, obviously they're not very intense in their press at all, and yet still, for me, have looked vulnerable on counterattacks. And I wondered if you could sort of highlight why that is.
The main thing is like Schroeder is not really like a pressing coach. He's much more like a Van Gaal kind of careful possession, and then don't really get in that transition games. And like, I think the big thing with their transition defense is you meant like they don't generate a lot of turnovers high, but like don't have those kind of forwards who can press either. And then like the defensive midfield spot, like Grilic has a lot of range, but he's not like the super athlete or anything, so he can be beaten. Like he's much more of a clever player. And then the other DM spot, or the other like even attacking mid spot, depending on what they play, has been like a mixture of people. Like Sama Sekou, who I really like. He was a part of those really good Salzburg teams with Marco Rose and René Maric. He came in the summer, and he's only just started to become like sort of a fixture in the last 6-7 games or so. And because before that they had like Rudy as a defensive mid, and he's like, to me, he kind of also, he's like another Grilic. Like to me, they're very similar players. So they have that, and then like the one guy, and then out wide they're not like you know their whole thing is they don't have any consistency at fullback, because they sold Nico Schulz to Dortmund, and Zuber, who just came back against Gladbach, is sort of a left back, and they've had to play Schkov at left back, who's right winger. And then right back, they were playing Nat Kadarzabek, who was a pretty pretty much of a staple under Nagelsmann, but they were playing Push, who's a kind of a converted center back, and then now they're playing Rudy. So they, I feel like they don't have like the necessarily like personnel, just sort of individual athletically, and also probably not structurally, although maybe Cam can talk more about that. But that's what I think. Like, I just don't think it's like super organized, and they don't have the right type of players to kind of defend in transition. Some of the center backs are okay. Like Hübner, I think, is a very good one-on-one defender and can have good recovery. I think Posch had those instincts, but then he also looked horrendous in some games. So it's just hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what about the recent games? How was it set up in them?
Yeah, like I watched a few of them sort of more closely, like the one against Frankfurt, which was the sort of their opener that they ended up losing, where they pretty much like were playing in like a 4-3-3, and that was more of the let's have a slow possession game against Frankfurt, who plays now basically for 2 months in this 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-1-1 sort of slower counterattacking. Like, it's not the old Frankfurt. So that was one of those games where I mentioned earlier, it just Hoffenheim tries to have the ball, and they went behind early, and then they tried to really, like, their one goal was a long distance, like Kostas Stafelidis, who doesn't play because he's a left back who's only really good at shooting from long range, and he plays like two games a year and has like the one long range goal. And then they were using Geiger and Rudy as the eights in that one, and Geiger got hurt, and he's a guy who has a lot of potential, but he gets hurt a lot, and but he's interesting, and so is Christoph Baumgartner, who he's kind of a he's probably the one interesting young player that they have. He's a hybrid sort of number eight, number 10, who's been playing sometimes as a nine, because they're also struggling with that. But it was just a game where they had a lot of possession, but then they get killed on the counters, particularly the Kostic Timmy Chandler connection of long ball. So that I thought like they didn't really look great in that one. The Bremen game, I mean, that's a like everybody's beating up on Bremen, but in that one they just matched kind of the 3-4-3 with like a 3-5-2, but like even expected goals wise, it was a pretty even game. Like, I think it was like 0.8-1 or something like that. So basically it was fairly even until they scored like an own goal and then like two late goals. So it's also not that great if you're just barely scraping by against Bremen. I didn't get a chance to see much of the Leverkusen game, but it was like one of those classic shootouts that they seemed to win. Like, the both teams had like over 2.5 XG, and they've been playing in a 3-4-3 in that one, and that's been kind of their thing. But I'm gonna try to watch that at some point. But then they have the sort of frustrating losses. Obviously, the cup game against Bayern was strange because they were down like 4-1, and then they nearly came back and they missed like a last minute chance to tie the game up. But Freiburg game was another one of those where I felt like they had a lot of possession, and then they got beat on the counters. It's a little bit like a same story. And then the one against Wolfsburg, I saw a little bit of it. It was, that was one. And this is a more recent development with them, is that they get into a lot of these weird refereeing decisions.
Game, where, wasn't it?
Like in that one, I think they gave up two penalties.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was Hoffenheim or Wolfsburg. Yeah, who was the one who got it was Hoffenheim got a penalty with, I think it was it Weghorst who handballed it? But I thought that was pretty... pretty unfair, that penalty. I'm not actually sure if I'm just disagreeing with the actual penalty rule these days. I'm not quite sure what it is.
Yeah, and the one that I watched like recently was the Gladbach game, which it's always like, I think anytime you watch Gladbach and you guys are talking about them, it's a really fun team to watch, and that was one of those where like I thought like Hoffenheim, in their setup, they went back to more of like a, it was actually like a 4-2-2-2 almost at times, like a 4-4-2 with Brun Larsen and Schko playing the sort of half space kind of wide forward-ish types. And Grilich and Samaseku was a double pivot, and they put Rudy as the left back. And like the one thing that I noticed is that when they got Steven Zuber back, who he's a left back, but like under Nagelsmann, he also played as a number eight. His importance is that he's ambipedal, so he can basically play passes with his right foot even under pressure, and that was like one of their ways they were able to overcome Gladbach's pressing, which is, as you guys mentioned, like it's really a difficult press to overcome. Is that they would use Baumann in the first line, would just create sort of a 3v2 when Gladbach were pressing, or they just access Zuber, and he could sometimes just progress with his left to Brun Larsson, sometimes just pass inside to Samaseku or Grilic even, or sometimes Baumgartner. So I thought that was really important, and that's a new wrinkle, because Zuber has been hurt for a pretty long time. So that was to me like the one noticeable part about what otherwise was an even game. Like I know Cam is not going to be a huge fan of their man marking of the goal they gave up to Ginter.
It was an interesting goal, really. Quite a nice routine from Gladbach. So it started off as looking like an in-swinging corner, and Gladbach's play started from deep. So Hoffenheim went up and met them man-to-man marking. Not sure who put the cross in, but they came across and short corner. It was disguised, really. So they came across late and looked to whip it in. And that came up to a right footer, so suddenly it then became an outswinger. Gladbach then had players positioned further back, so not goal side, which helps with an outswinger because it obviously goes further away from the goal. And then they're in a better position to win the second ball, and there was diversion runs as well from Gladbach players. Obviously, man-marking Hoffenheim then follow them, and that pinned back some Hoffenheim markers and created a bit of space for that second ball, which is it Ginter smashed in?
Yeah, I think Neuhaus was the one who put in the cross, and Ginter is the one who, which is Ginter has this trend where he scored, like he doesn't score ever in the Bundesliga, but he scored like four of the last five matches against Hoffenheim, so must be something for him. But yeah, like I thought some of the issues that they had for THG was Samaseku still looks like a little pressable when they try to access him, and like to me he's much more of a number six at times, like I rank him as a single pivot in Salzburg much more than when at this team. I still don't know where he fits in particularly, because they have Grilic and like they had Rudy who they moved out of there, and I feel like all three of them are pretty similar players. Like Samaseku is probably more rangy and more defensive minded, but I just think like, and Grilic gets forward a lot, like that's one of the good things about him. I thought he was a really good in the first half for sure, just dribbling, just finding spaces, just finding combinations. That's one part that was intriguing, is that they finally were able to get a little speedier with their combinations, and it's not just sort of counterattacks, but it's actually like good triangles with Brun Larsson and Sko and Baumgartner, who I think is probably the most intriguing player that they have. And they also had to change a lot of what they wanted to do, because Dabur, who got hurt about 20 minutes in, there was like a big 5-minute stoppage in this game, because it was a pretty innocuous sort of ball was played up to him. Nobody's under next to him, and I think he either blew out his ACL or something. And then they had to bring on Bebu, who is a much more speedier counter-attacking type of player, and I don't think he fits into what they want to do. I didn't really like Brun Larsson, just sort of his final third decisions, and there was a lot of time that they were able to attack on that side with Leiner and others. So I don't know. It's always weird with Hoffenheim. I like, you know, this is the typical stuff with them where now they play these kind of games, and they did end up putting up like 21 shots in this game, you know, but only four on target. And then they conceded 16 shots to 10 on target, and Baumann made some crazy saves too. now there's such a crisis in terms of strikers, because Kramaric has just started training. They're missing Adamian, they're missing Dabur, that Lucas might actually, this is a guy I think they recalled from loan, that he might be starting against Bayern. So it's a weird season for Hoffenheim.
Right, so we've reached a point where David's actually going to speak and do something in this podcast now. So, David, tell us about Wolfsburg.
Well, do you know what I should say as well? We totally messed up the order as well, Cam, because I'm pretty sure Wolfsburg are in seventh.
So, you say we, but...
Yeah, it was totally on me. Do you know what? I always feel bad leaving the guests to speak last. So maybe that's what it was. Yeah, well, Cam normally goes first because he's impatient and rude, and and we let the guest go second. Right, yeah. So okay, I'll talk about Wolfsburg. I think they face they've been a really interesting side this season. I think they faced a bit of an identity crisis sort of just before the halfway point of the season. I think their 3-4-3 that Glasner obviously introduced at the beginning of the season, and it worked so well to begin with, started to possibly backfire a little bit, and we've spoken about that in previous podcasts, but particularly the back-to-back games against Leipzig and Dortmund, where it was exposed in two different ways, which we've spoken about before. So I won't go over that again. If you haven't listened to the back three podcasts that we did a couple of weeks ago, I recommend checking that out. So yeah, obviously Glasner used the 3-4-3 at the beginning of the season, and that was something that he used so frequently at Lask Linz before he moved to Wolfsburg. I think in his final season at Linz, I think they used it 93% of games. That's what I've got written down here. So when Glasner decided to move away from that formation, I think there were naturally going to be some sort of growing pains as such. And In the period after the two losses against Leipzig, obviously the 6-1 loss to Leipzig was in the cup, and then Dortmund the week after, they had just 7 points from 9 games, and in that time they were sort of transitioning to using a back four and changing their system slightly. But since the winter break, they've come back pretty strong, and particularly in the last 4 games, they've got 10 points and suddenly shot back up the table. And I think we're at a point where Cam and I remember we were having a discussion about Wolfsburg and sort of wondering where their season was going, whether they were going to get drawn into even perhaps a relegation battle. And obviously they've very much pulled away from that.
Yeah, if I could jump in, I think the interesting part is that, like, you know, they had like the longest unbeaten streak in Europe with Juventus early on, you remember the first 9 games. And then they, like, that Leipzig game, I remember watching that in studio, and then they just got crushed, like, second half, like 10 minutes they conceded those goals. And that's when, like, Glasner, I think the biggest thing for them is their offense collapsed. Like, Weghorst, who we mentioned about the penalties, like, he went like 600 minutes without a goal. And Glasner was just saying that the 3-4-3 doesn't work as much because they can't generate enough attack. And like the big loss for them was Save Schlager, who was once again on the Marco Rose Salzburg teams. And he, I think, went down with was like an ACL thing. It was very early, like week 3 or 2. And once they lost him, like, they just had a very difficult time just progressing the ball. It was mostly like their build-up would just be like Maxi Arnold just pulling out wide and then just play lots of wrong balls to Weghorst. And really, I think the main part where they struggled, aside from that sort of central midfield area, is the wide forward roles. Like, they played João Victor, who was at Linz, and he's been kind of phased out. Brekalo, who is a really streaky, dribbly player who can have good days, it mostly just doesn't have a lot of good days. And then Mehmedi, like, neither of those guys have worked. So that's why Glasner switched to this 4-3-3, where he can play, you know, more like they can play like pretty much all three of Gilavogi, who's their defensive ball winner, Arnold, who's kind of like their deep lying left sided sort of left footed laser pass playing playmaker, and then Schlager, who is kind of like a do it all Swiss Army knife guy. And
you're absolutely right. I think something one of the big problems before Christmas was that, you know, Weghorst had such little support goal-wise. I think going into the Christmas break, I'm pretty sure their second highest scorer had 2 goals. I'm not sure who that was. Maybe it might have been a couple. I think maybe Maximilian Arnold.
Like, I mean, even now, like, Stefan scored those 2 goals last weekend, and now he's the second leading scorer.
Yeah, for sure. And I think they haven't entirely abandoned certain principles of their 3-4-3 anyway. I mean, I noticed, particularly against Hoffenheim, you were seeing Maximilian Arnold drop in between the two centre backs, which is obviously something that Cam mentioned that we see Bayern doing a lot with Thiago or Kimmich, and that allowed, you know, Mbabu, for example, to push up nice and, you know, high and wide and give that width and allow the wide forwards to play in the half spaces. And so in possession against Hoffenheim, not all the time, but certainly at times, you saw them definitely using the principles of a 3-4-3.
Yeah, like I guess, like if you want to talk about sort of like one of the central defenders is another area where they've changed a lot of guys. Like it was, you know, Pongracic they brought in from again Salzburg, and he, like, I thought he's gonna be a great signing for them because this guy with a huge upside, and then he basically like got a red card. It was one of like the first games, and like he's suspended for 3 games, and so they had to bring back John Anthony Brooks, who hasn't been that good. But then, you know, Bruma was another guy they got rid of, you know, to Mainz, and that's been like a major spot of you know, I think now like defensive stability and just personnel wise, because William, who is a very combative right back, he gets into a lot of tackles but doesn't do, like, defensively he's positionally suspect. Like he went down, and with Mbabu they got somebody who's a very attacking minded fullback / wingback, and Roussillon, who I really liked last season, but this season he's not been that great, and I think now he's also hurt, and they were playing Paulo Ottavio, who was also at Linz. So it's a mix. It's a mix. Like, I think Robin Kroche has been kind of the guy who's played a lot, but he's also like he's a very like average Bundesliga defender who can.
Yeah, his statistics are pretty average across the board, other than interceptions, in which I think he's
kind of like the odd weird dribble out of the back. Like, that's the one thing I see from him, but nothing else really.
Yeah, and I think with the 3-4-3 that you know, they have abandoned, I could see Glasner bringing that back in the future. I think with the centre back core that they have, it didn't quite necessarily suit that shape. I think particularly in transition, when you had the likes of Bruma and Brooks, who, as good as they are in the air, if you can catch them on the counter attack, they're not the most athletic defenders. And I mean, as we mentioned earlier, Leipzig and Dortmund definitely exposed that.
You know what I liked is when really early on in the season they were playing Guy Lavoggi as the sort of the central of those three center backs. I'm not sure why they went away from that. I mean, I guess he's a little too important to not play as a defensive midfielder, but I liked that setup when they were playing him at the third center back, and then they had Schlager and Arnold as the two sort of number six slashes. I thought that was a cool formation.
And it's interesting what you said about Schlager as well. I think they just look so much better with him in midfield. I was really impressed with him in that Hoffenheim game. And like you said, yeah, he really changes their sort of ball progression game as well. That was a good point.
Do you think they're similar to Schalke in terms of if you let them have the ball and try and limit the counters they have, that they get nullified a bit?
Yeah, for sure. Like, one of the things that I'm thinking of now is, like, I wrote an article about the Bundesliga kind of playing out of the back, and I highlighted some of the stuff for Wolfsburg, and like Castells is their goalkeeper, and he's not super ambitious. Like, he's decent with his feet, but, you know, he came up through Hoffenheim, but he's not gonna like pick apart anybody, and like none of their center backs are sort of ambitious passers. Although, like, John Brooks actually, when he was playing under Labbadia and they played a 4-3-3, he actually had some good angles, like almost like what the type of passes that Zagadou plays. The sort of, you know, he like disguises the pass where he looks sort of to the fullback outside and he plays it to their number eight. Like, he used to have those, but I didn't really see those from him this season, where they just usually play long balls. Anytime they get pressed, it's just dump it to Weghorst. So and like, even I think when they get a little pressure put on them, just building out of the back, like I think they just get rid of the ball kind of too easily for my liking. And even like, you know, it doesn't have to be like great pressure. Like I think it was actually the Hoffenheim game. Now that I actually managed to find those notes from there, where like they're trying to build in that shape where Arnold pulls out to the so almost like a right fullback space, and Hoffenheim just have this sort of like pentagon kind of shape that they press with, almost like a maybe sometimes five guys, sometimes six, and but anyway, it's just the two strikers just are kind of light sort of in position between the center backs and sort of the DM, and as soon as they move the ball to Brooks, he gets pressed, he goes back to the keeper, and then they try to bring it around to Knoche, and then he just passes it out of bounds. Like it's very light pressure, so there's like a lot of that stuff that I wasn't a huge fan of.
Looking at, I think if we flip it and look at actually as well how Wolfsburg press, I think there's some interesting things going on there as a pressing side. They got a 9.83 passes per defensive action, which is the fourth highest in the league. And since they've changed to that 4-3-3, they do some interesting things with their shape. You see them sort of press with like a, I mean, in particular, again, if we go back to the Hoffenheim game, you saw them pressing with that sort of like a attacking flat four. And Schlager pushes up from midfield. And joins Weghorst in the center, and you see a huge commitment to blocking central passing lanes. And I mean, Arnold and Gidavogi just sit behind them as well. And it's interesting. They're very patient, but as soon that I mean, it's a basic trigger. But as soon as a backwards pass is played, you see Weghorst and Schlager press quite intensely. And that's something that I mean, Glasner had a reputation for. Coming out of Linz is that sort of high press. And when they played that back three at the beginning of the season, I thought that their pressing structure worked particularly well to play into the strengths of the likes of Bruma and Brooks. And they were able to force teams to play longer balls, which those defenders could deal with. And you're seeing some sort of similar principles, but just done in a different way. And I just think that the Schlager pushing up into that centre forward, almost a centre forward role, when they press is something interesting. Right. Okay. So I think we should move on to the end of the podcast. And at the end of every episode, we do a player of the week. I don't know if you this, Abel.
Yeah,
but,
he did.
Oh, fantastic. Excellent. Well, I'm going to jump in first because otherwise Cam will steal mine. And it's all right because Cam normally chooses about seven players anyway. So we've got plenty left over. Mine was a super simple one, and it's Christopher Nkunku, who got his 8th, 9th, 10th and 11th Bundesliga assist this season in the first half last weekend, and just super impressive him, and he just seems to be growing every week into just a better and better footballer. How much did they pay for him? Was it 10, 11 million?
12, somewhere around there, maybe 15, but not a lot, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how he develops, because I think we've been critical. One thing he needs to add to his game is consistent goal scoring. I think it'll be interesting to see how he grows into his role next season when Werner likely leaves. So that could be an interesting one to watch, I think, an interesting story for next season. Abel, who is your player of the week?
Yeah, it's like a weird one, like, because I think we're just choosing Bundesliga only, right? Like, it's not related to.
Hey, you know what? If you had, go for it. If you got something interesting, go for it.
I don't know. I guess like because it was a strange week because you know you had a lot of these teams who won away big but I'll choose somebody from the Bundesliga because just to keep it somebody and somebody who doesn't get a lot of sort of plaudits and it'll be Juan Cordoba, I guess, from Köln. He's a guy who, like, he's another guy where, like, he's always had crazy physical tools. Like, I remember sort of one game when they were playing against, like, Bayern and Javi Martinez was a center back and just Javi Martinez just had no chance against him, which I guess it's Javi Martinez, so it's not that, like, super surprising. But he's a guy who, like, super super physical, like just pressing. He's really good. He's good in the air. He's just, you know, lightning pace. And he had the 20 goal season last year in the Zweite Liga, and you know, thought, okay, he's gonna break out this season. And then it really took him a pretty long time even in this campaign, and I wanted, and then like the tough part was that when Bayer Lotzer was the coach, then he wasn't really getting a lot of chances necessarily. Like he would get some starts, but basically early on in the season, and he just like then he became a bench player, and they played Terode and Tony Modest, and I think he didn't have a goal until November, and even and then so basically since then he scored the 8 goals, I want to say, since like November 30th. So and then pretty much XG numbers are around 7, so it's there to match. So he's had 2 goals. Yeah, it's against Hertha, and Hertha are, you know, Hertha and their team in turmoil. But that game was, and a lot of his goals are, he gets sent in on counters, and just one on one, he's just such a difficult guy to deal with, and he's learned to finish confidently. So that's why I chose him.
Fantastic. And Cam, I'm going to ask you, hoping that it's not going to be Thiago once again.
It's a Bayern player.
Oh, of course it is.
But it's Robert Lewandowski.
So
underground choice.
We've talked about the Champions League as well. In the past week, he's got 3 goals and 2 assists. I've already mentioned his role in the Chelsea game, and vital in that game. Without him, whether or not they would have broke that Chelsea press is up for debate, really. Probably the best number 9 in the world at the moment, certainly up there. His decision-making, movement, finishing, all first class, really. Creates space for others, and he knows what he's doing. So there was one particular passage of play where I think Pavard got it down the right. Lewandowski pinned the centre-backs in and created space for Müller, who was just behind him in between the lines. And as soon as the pass was played by Pavard towards Müller, Lewandowski span off his marker straight away and tried to make a running behind. I actually had a debate with one of my mates the other day about if I'd rather have him or Cristiano Ronaldo in a team at this at this time of the season.
Is that even a debate? Look, I'd rather have Lewandowski.
I think the better question is, like, what's the year where you wouldn't have Lewandowski? You know what I mean? Like, how far do you have to go back, right? Like maybe, I don't know, 2017, 16? Like, I don't know. It's like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I presume you went with that as well, right, Cam?
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Well, and obviously he's out for, I see he's out for 4 weeks with a fractured tibia or fibula. I don't remember which one it is.
Yeah.
I'm going back to GCSE biology here. I think the tibia is the one at the front, right?
Yeah.
There you go. And obviously going back to what you were saying earlier about Hoffenheim, Abel, I mean, Hoffenheim are playing Bayern this weekend, and I mean, I wouldn't want to bet against Bayern right now, even without Lewandowski, but you never know. It's definitely going to change the way they set up. Any predictions for how Bayern are going to set up without Lewandowski?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely one is to use Gnabry as the number 9, which is, you know, like Germany does that sometimes. If you see their setup with the 3-4-3, but you know, he played as a second striker for Hoffenheim actually when he was there. If you guys remember the one Nagelsmann season, and then he was kind of a striker at Bremen as well, so he's comfortable there. You can also play Thomas Müller there. I think not necessarily in this game. And then Zirkzee is the super sub. But I still don't think he's a guy who's not, he's going to be a starter. So it's more like just to give you a simple answer, like they'll probably have Gnabry up top, and they'll push like Coutinho as a left winger. And I think since Coman is out for at least a week or at this game, so they're just going to put either like Müller wide, and then they'll have like Goretzka as a 10.
And I mean, it's a really interesting weekend of games. Not only are there some interesting games at the top of the table, I think Leverkusen, Leipzig is also going to be a really interesting game to see. Yeah. But 4 of the bottom 5, I believe, are playing each other as well. And we could see Hertha brought even closer towards the relegation battle as well. I mean, yeah, some interesting games. I think the final thing that I'd add to this, I was thinking of this as Abel was telling us about Grealish earlier. I was at a tactical insights conference. I mentioned it last week. I was at that Leicester last weekend, and I got talking to one of the analysts from Stats Perform who run Opta Stats, and he actually went through finding the perfect replacement for my hero. Mark Noble, and they went with Grealish, and I thought that was incredibly flattering to Mark Noble.
Yeah, seriously.
Brilliant.
Does he foul enough people to replace Mark
Noble? Hey, wow. You know, a couple.
He has like the dirty fouls in him.
Oh, a couple of years ago, I'm pretty sure at like the halfway point of the league, Mark Noble was.
Yeah, he had a lot of yellow.
Well, no, I think he was the most fouled player in the league as well. Okay. Right. He knows how to buy a foul.
It's like the Daniel Bayer of the Premier League, Daniel Bayer of Augsburg. Like, he has that reputation where he has like the 15 yellow cards a season, but like also as many.
Yeah. I'm one of those people that can really appreciate someone buying a foul. I don't know what that says about me. Abel, it's been such a pleasure to have you on and listen to your obvious passion for the league and just some really insightful opinions. It's been really great to hear you speak, and hopefully we can get you on again in the future, because I mean, it's just been fantastic. So
it's a lot of fun for me as well.
Awesome.
So I would be happy to.
So thanks very much, and it really breaks up having to listen to Cam every week. So that's great. Okay, we'll be on again same time, hopefully next week. And we didn't get to cover Freiburg, so maybe that's something that we look at next week, Cam.
Possibly, yeah. We'll see.
Possibly. I mean, you sound enthusiastic.
They defend well, that's it.
They also have my favourite player in the league, Yannick Harbrook, but we'll talk about that another time. Thanks for listening.